The Keep It To Yourself podcast is recorded on the ancestral land of the Mohican tribe.
Quiet, we're on the air.
This is a Kitty Pod production. Celebrity Dodgeball with John Sterling will not be seen at this time, so that we may bring you a program starring someone who ought to have stuff thrown at him on the regs.
From Television City in Hollywood.
Hey, man!
Welcome to episode number 187 of the Keep It To Yourself podcast, the most above average podcast ever to hit your ear holes. My name, of course, and as always, is Jason Bullitt.
The regulator, innovator, dominator, creator, a theta, pussy, imitator, assassinator, baby.
I demand the hour, demand the power, too sweet to be sour.
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
I'm your friend.
That's right, it's me, Smokey Bear.
Gosh, what a neat guy.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
Baby, baby.
And I'm coming to you once again from the rolling hills of Saratoga County, New York. We did it, folks. It's officially summer 2023, on the calendar at least. It's unofficially been there for about a month. As we near the end of Pride Month, we're going to take a look at what it's like to be on the spectrum and also be part of the LGBT community. So we'll get into that in just a moment, plus the usual integrities and features and segments that consist of normal Keep It To Yourself podcast episode. So it's going to be boring as usual, is that right? Oh, will you get out of here? Jeez. Early and often, I feel like. Oh, man, what's worse, him or the Yankee slump? We'll get into a little bit of that in Jason's Sports Corner. Fast forward through that when we get there. I so have to put timestamps in the show notes. But anyway, let's get to social media here first. You can follow us on Instagram at Keep It To Yourself Podcast. There's Facebook.com/Keep It To Yourself Podcast. By the way, I heard that Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, I don't know who challenged who to a steel cage match or MMA or something like that. My money's on Mark Zuckerberg. Lesser of two evils. The enemy of the enemy is my friend. Also, you can get at me at the world's loneliest email, KITYpod@gmail.com. As I record this, I want to wish the Littles well. The Littles are fans of the Tony Kornheiser Show, of whom I am one, who, as of time of recording, are enjoying themselves in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, taking in all that D.C. has to offer, and just hanging out with fellow fans of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Now, you may recall in past years, or most of them anyway, I did a special show where I picked out my favorite Tony Kornheiser jingles from the first part of the calendar year. Well, unfortunately, seems like every time you hear a jingle that opens the mailbag, more often than not, it's a variation of the original mailbag jingle done by Gary Braun. So I say, well, I guess traditions die hard, but this one died quietly. But just the same, I want to wish all the Littles out there a happy and safe time in Washington, D.C. this weekend among your fellow brethren and sistren who are fans of the Tony Kornheiser Show. And when it comes to Summer of Littles on August 5th of this year, I'll catch you at the virtual venue. I learned my lesson from 2 years of trying and then ultimately failing to do these types of meetups in person. One time it was, well, last year it was the heat. Second year in a row it wound up being, you know, the threat of the Delta COVID variant. So there's that. So have a great time, folks, down there in D.C. if you're a fan of the Tony Kornheiser Show. And I'm here in the rolling hills. I give you all a hearty la cheeserie. Okay, with that out of the way, let's get to the vanity portion and what has been happening in the life of one J. Michael Bullitt since last he spoke and you listened. Well, there's only one thing to talk about, and that's Father's Day and how I celebrated. My dad came home sometime on Saturday, I believe. It was here at Bullitt House in the rolling hills, made his way back from the Berkshires. And it's been kind of a, I have to explain this here too. It was a busy weekend. Let's back the truck up some. 48 hours earlier, I took a personal day. Why didn't just take a half day? I'll never know. I went to my nephew's, shall we say, moving up ceremony. He's done with fifth grade as of day of recording, officially. He will go into the middle school or junior high or whatever it's called in the Mechanicsville School District, Mechanicsville, New York, shout out. And he'll be going into sixth grade, so it's like middle school or junior high or I don't know. There's something like that here. It's a much smaller district than the Saratoga Springs City School District, that much I know. Oh, well, you'll get on with the show. All right, come on. Gee, that's two, all right? That's your second, and let's make that your last, all right? So where was I? Oh, yeah, so we all assembled in the auditorium at the high school where this ceremony took place. My nephew was recognized as being a member of the fifth grade band. He plays the clarinet, and hopefully he will be able to take that with him into the rough and tumble world of middle school band classes. Boy, that ought to be a hoot, just like your boy. He did it in fifth grade, except he played a woodwind instrument, but he played a flute. Or he played the flute, or anything like that. Anyway, I don't want him to come back. That other guy, not my nephew. Anyway, the ceremony ran about an hour or so. You know, it was, you know, typical fifth grade stuff. Nothing much to write home about. And then, you know, I gave my nephew the dap. I had mailed him his card because I hate to put personal matters in here, but I'm going to have to tell you the truth because that's what this podcast has been about. You know, me being transparent with all of you, whoever you may be, you know, all you listen, I certainly appreciate that. There's been some, shall we say, tension going on in both sides of the Bullitt family camp here in the Rolling Hills, and that has to do, in some part, with my dad's fiance, Nancy, whom I've mentioned before in many of these episodes. And for some reason, you know, we try to get together for, you know, normal family functions, birthdays, this, that, and the other. I remember listening back to the first episode of this year, 2023, when my sister, her husband, and my nephew came here to Bullitt House for Christmas dinner. They claimed they already ate, so while the four of us were knocking down lasagna in the kitchen, my sister and husband were posted up in the living room here at Bullitt House, where I'm coming to you from today, or whenever it is you're listening. It's been a bit of a source of agita and grief for my dad. Well, I don't know if grief's the word for it, but there you go. Well, too strong of a word. I use that for something more tamer. So, we were sat in the front row because the weather had caused my dad some jib with his leg. So much so he needed a cane to get around. So, it was just the two of us that went to the ceremony. It lasted for about an hour. We sat behind my sister and her husband. She got recognized for her work with the PTA. And then afterwards, you know, my dad wanted to give Hunter the dap and say congratulations. And then just bypassed both me and dad, went right to my brother-in-law. He gave me the dap, though, so, you know, he's good with his Uncle Jason. He has no idea what's going on, but he does sense some tension going on. I heard the speech from one of Hunter's now former teachers that, you know, he addressed the parents, said, these kids are going to need you more than ever. They're going to rely on you more than they are right now. I don't know how this is going to go on that end, but it's going to be some interesting times right there. So I just want to tell you that some storm clouds here in the Rolling Hills, metaphorically speaking, as far as family relations. It's affected me, too. I know I've kept up my end by going to their house whenever my dad's not here for supper and going over their place to have pizza and whatnot. And my sister would rarely, if ever, speak to me. Or even I was afraid to get a word in too. So it's affected me, but it's affected my dad even more. So there's that. So, you know, it was the only time we saw him the whole day. The only time we saw him the whole weekend. Even though she did text my dad Happy Father's Day. Now, back to that now. Sorry for that long tangent and sad one, too. So, we celebrate Father's Day by going out to this Italian/Greek restaurant here in the Rolling Hills. I want to give them a shout-out. Grecian Gardens in Half Moon on Route 9. Salute! And I told them, guess what? It's Father's Day. I'm fronting the bill. Well, $60 later, almost. We were well fed. My dad and I shared a pizza. Nancy got seafood fra diavolo. So I'm like, well, so that was it there. It's a great meal. I wish the weekend had been better. We had all five of us celebrating. So all in all, it was a great Father's Day. I wish all six of us could have been able to celebrate. And I think, for the most part, it's my dad's fiance that's causing some of the agita between my sister and my dad. I have no part in it, but I feel as though in some way I'm being a pawn in this chess game. And it's affecting me too. I don't show this podcast, but like I said from just about the very beginning, when it comes to this podcast, it's a look at my life on the autism spectrum and how I view the world in a rather unique way. And that's just how I see it, what's going on with my family. I don't know if the word dysfunctional would certainly apply here, but I'll leave it to you to make that judgment. So that's the vanity portion, and let's get to some lighter fare.
What in the wide world of sports is going on here?
Alright folks, we've now made it to Jason's Sports Corner, and if sports isn't your bag as always, feel free to zip ahead to the next segment. Like I said in the open, I gotta think about putting timestamps on these episodes so you'll know where to go. Anyway, it's been a busy time in the sports world. Well, it was until recently. We're kind of in this dead zone right here where it's just baseball and whatnot. It's one of those years, like I said, the Women's World Cup is gonna be coming in the next month or so down Australia, New Zealand, all the other stuff that I look forward to, like the Big Three, the basketball tournament, you know, this, that, and the other. In fact, go back in the archives when you're done listening to this episode and go back to an episode I did last year where I did my 10 from 40 series on my favorite sporting events that happen year on year, not my favorite sporting events of all time. All right, back to the lecture at hand here. The NBA Finals, the winter sports are done. The NBA Finals, you know, congratulations to the Denver Nuggets, to my listeners in Denver and throughout Colorado. You deserve this one, man. Nikola Jokic had himself a heck of a playoffs. He was named the Finals MVP. First title for the Denver Nuggets franchise. And, you know, I give credit to the Miami Heat. I didn't expect much of them in this playoffs, but they had a heck of a run as an 8 seed. You know, guys like Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, etc., etc. But they wound up being what I call a gentleman's sweep. That means you win in 4 games, but you let the other team get one. All right, let them get them under the belt here. You know, charity work. Well, a series that went a little longer than the NBA Finals with the Stanley Cup Finals. If we have any listeners in James Holzhauer country, that would be Las Vegas and Southern Nevada. Congrats to you guys, the Vegas Golden Knights. Second appearance in the Stanley Cup Finals. Their first Stanley Cup championship feels like the first time. Oh, I don't have the rights to that song. All right, never mind. Now, I didn't watch 1 minute of the Stanley Cup Finals, but I heard in Game 4, whoo boy, it was quite the ruckus at the end of the game. Matthew Tkachuk was just, you know, throwing them left, right, and center. And they had a scrum at the goal near the end of the game. But, you know, I just catch the highlights on the news or I watch them on YouTube on my own time. That's pretty much how I consume sports. Well, with the good comes the bad. And we got to talk Yankees here. And, oh boy. Their record is above 500, but without Aaron Judge in the lineup, they may as well be lower in the standings. As I record this, they're 10.5 up on, you know, back of Tampa Bay. I wish they were in the lead. I wouldn't be talking about it this way. 10.5 behind, games behind Tampa Bay. Baltimore right in second place. And the Orioles had such a hot start to the season and a hard start or something like that. Things have been going good for them up to this point. But the Yankees, well, Aaron Judge, I mean, I saw him make that great catch against the Dodgers, watching on Fox. But unfortunately, you know, that injured his toe. He's on the injured list again. And we had a bit of a show of a transaction here. Willie Calhoun tweaked his hamstring when I watched on Amazon Prime on Monday night, or the Wednesday night, rather. And he got sent to the injured list. He didn't get sent to the American League. This isn't hockey. So Oswald Cabrera, who had been sent down to AAA Scranton Wilkes-Barre, he got the call up back to the main squad. Like, run it back. Come back to the Bronx, man. We got to fill a spot in the roster. Get back up here as soon as you can there, fella. Not too long for the Poconos, wasn't he? I listened to DiPietro and Rothenberg, and it's a show my brother-in-law got me on, and I listen on the podcast. I don't listen live every morning because, well, I'm not in a car in the morning anymore. I work at home. I work from home. I work at home and from home. You get it. Anyway, back to the lecture at hand yet again. There was a guy on the morning roast. That's the Friday segment in the big second hour of the show every Friday where listeners get to vent their spleen about what's driving them up the wall and other idioms. And this one guy I heard on the podcast, he called in. He compared the Yankees right now to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, with no drive to win a championship. I mean, this is a team that's won 27 World Series championships throughout its history. And one of the most polarizing, if not the most polarizing, sports franchises of all time in North America. And this has been a rough few years. You know, good enough to get to the playoffs, but there's no drive to get further to the Super Bowl. I mean, not the Super Bowl, the World Series. Super Bowl for the Cowboys, but you get the idea. So, well, hopefully, Judge will get back in the lineup sooner than later. And we'll get back to winning ways here. They paid him a lot of money. You know, quote Gorilla Monsoon. Spent a lot of money. All right, what else is on my notes here? The U.S. Open in golf at Los Angeles Country Club. That was quite a sight to see. I watched the third and fourth rounds over the weekend. I was very interested to see who was going to win it here. I thought Rory McIlroy was finally going to break his duck as far as major golf tournaments go. I so want him to win the British Open last year. But there was this guy named Wyndham Clark, whom I wouldn't have known from Adam. I couldn't be able to pick him out in the police lineup, but he took the whole thing down, man. The opposition seemed to melt during the final round. I watched in prime time. There at tea time was what was going on when we were at the restaurant out to supper. And we were watching in prime time, Saturday and Sunday night. I think we watched Friday night as well. Got about an hour. It's like, I'm going to bed. That's what happens when you have a major tournament on the West Coast, ladies and gentlemen. So congrats to Wyndham Clark and getting ready for the British Open. And, of course, my favorite non-major golf tournament, the American Century Championships out there in Lake Tahoe. That should be a sight. And we're going to end with horse racing here. There is rumor afoot that the Saratoga Racecourse is going to play host to the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of horse racing's Triple Crown, in 2025. They're going to take place at Saratoga Racecourse because Belmont Park downstate is undergoing a renovation, or will be at that time. Now, as somebody who has yearly suffered the vagaries and this, that, and the other of having the racecourse being in action during the meet in mid-July, all through the month of August, and right to Labor Day weekend, it can be a real headache getting to the track or just in general getting through town, the old hometown of Saratoga Springs, New York. This is going to add a whole level of chicken, being a Triple Crown race and all that. So you think it's bad for 6 weeks out of the whole dang year, to paraphrase the song from Damn Yankees? Oh boy, you wait till June 2025, perhaps, when all this goes down. And that, thankfully and mercifully in some cases, is the end of Jason's Sports Corner. So on that note, we will now turn to our main event. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, we're nearing the end of Pride Month here in the United States and probably in your part of the world if I had to wager. And we're marking the occasion by taking a rather unique look at what's like being on two spectrums. And by that I mean being on the autism spectrum and also identifying as part of the LGBTQIA, alphabet soup, all that stuff. And it's a pretty interesting tack, angle, whatever you want to call it, that I'm doing here in this episode. And it's kind of struck my fancy. So in doing my research, I came across two articles, and I'm going to put the links to these articles in the show notes, as has been my wont in recent times, and I got to make darn sure I do something like that. But back to the lecture at hand, I always try to find reliable sources for this sort of thing, and the internet did not disappoint so far as I can make out. Now, first up there, this website from sparkforautism.org, written by Marina Saris, that was published back in June of 2020, with the headline, Autistic People More Likely to Identify as LGBTQ. I'm going to try and Cliff's Notes this as best I can. Got the article in front of me here. There's a woman named Riley, who was assigned male at birth. I use the she, her pronouns advisedly because she eventually came to realize that the article states that she is a transgender woman. And she's certainly not alone in that expectation as somebody on the autism spectrum. There are a higher percentage of autistic people who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer than the general populace. A Gallup poll in 2017 discovered that 4.5% of Americans identify as being gay. Our studies vary widely on how many people who are on the autism spectrum who are LGBTQ, etc. One analysis went so far as to suggest the rate is 15 to 35% among autistic people who do not have an intellectual disability. That's a pretty fair amount given the 4.5 I just mentioned moments ago. And what also clouds things up more is that there are several studies that also suggest that autistic men are more likely than their female counterparts to be heterosexual. You could throw me in there even though I didn't participate in the study. Or one of them. For example, in a study from the Netherlands, only 57%, that's just over half, folks, of autistic women reported being straight compared to an overwhelming majority of autistic men, 82% all told. The women were more likely to be attracted to both sexes and also to neither sex. So they could swing both ways or be like, And as if that weren't enough, research suggested that people who have an autism diagnosis or trait suggesting they have ASD, autism spectrum disorder, are more likely to be transgender than the general population. One study found the rate to be 2 or 3 times higher in people who have autism. Quoting the article here still. Also, a larger percentage of autistic people reported their gender as being something other than strictly male or female compared to others. Examples of gender identities included in that study were bigender, genderqueer, and other, miscellaneous. Now, when we get to be teenagers, that's when we start finding stuff about ourselves or discovering it or one thing or another like that. Once you get like 13, 14 years old, you're going through middle school, junior high. You don't know that you have autism, or nobody really knows. At least that's how it was when I was growing up. But you discover things like, well, am I gay? What's going on here? There's so much in your body is changing. Well, this woman named Riley, I'm going to leave her last name out of this. And she said that autism diagnosis may have made it more difficult to figure out that I was transgender, mainly because I had issues with not being fully in touch with my own feelings and desires. And she was a participant in the Spark Autism study. That's what I was talking about with the autism diagnosis. Actually, I buried the lead. She wondered if being on the spectrum delayed her recognition of her gender identity in her younger years. There was another boy named Justin who did not want his last name mentioned and says so in the article. I did the other person the same favor out of my own preference. He discovered in high school that he was both gay and autistic. Or had autism, if I may use the first-person language. Justin said, I knew what being gay was, but I personally lacked the emotional self-awareness for a while until I realized that's what I was feeling toward other guys. I wasn't openly gay in high school because I suspected very strongly I would be attacked. End quote. Well, I wasn't bullied for being gay. I didn't come out to anybody on that front. I knew there was something different about me. It wasn't of the sexual variety. I was more attracted to the ladies than I was the fellas. That's just my leanings. Back in my younger days, that was. Well, we mentioned bullying just moments ago briefly. Now we're going to take a little deeper dive into it. For students like Justin and Riley, bullying is a particular risk for students. According to research, I'm quoting the article again, students on the autism spectrum are at higher risk of being bullied. Boy, don't you know. I mentioned that just some time earlier. Ditto for LGBT youth. In fact, a survey of U.S. high school students that was taken in 2017 found that those who are on the LGBT spectrum are almost twice as likely to be bullied at school and online as their heterosexual counterparts, which is pretty scary when you get right down to it. Now, Justin, who at the time was in his 20s and probably still is, as I'm recording this, wasn't immune to bullying when he was in high school. He goes on to say, I was bullied for being autistic. It was more mental torture, not, you know, getting beat up and all that, you know, just, you know, shove me into a locker, all that classic bully jock stuff you'd see in John Hughes movies. Just saying. Justin goes on to say, I'm continuing the quote, it's just that no one involved knew that's what I was. They just saw me as this awkward nerd. My differences offended them, so they wanted to be mean. It was more head games with me. I just end the quote. It was more head games with me in my own experience. But I tried, like you know what, to ingratiate myself into that part of the community. I knew I was different. I knew I saw things a different way. I knew I thought a different way. It was trying to get into that group and not be lumped into one category or one box or anything like that. This is Riley we're talking here. She said that she was mildly bullied in high school. She goes on to say that it wasn't due to anything LGBT related, and I don't think they knew I have autism, but they knew I was unusual. And there ends that quote. And she came out as a gay man to her family. Then in her 20s, she decided, oh, wait a minute. I'm transgender, so I decided to start transitioning to a female and identifying as such. Now, the end of this article says there's ways to find support and information for gender and questions of sexuality in autism. So she wound up attending, this is Riley we're talking about, an online support group for people who are transitioning from the male gender to the female gender. And her mother also started a group for parents of transgender adults on the spectrum. Apart from gender identity issues, quote the article, the transition to adulthood alone can be difficult for anyone on the spectrum, says St. John. Adding in a gender transition, according to her, compounds the difficulty, quote unquote. Her group members want to help support their children through their transitions, as any loving parent would want to do. That last bit was not in the article. That was my editorializing. And back to Justin here. We don't want to leave him out. He says that understanding and accepting his autism made it easier to understand and accept his sexuality and vice versa. People on the autism spectrum and those who are on the LGBTQ spectrum often face negative stereotypes, boy, don't you know, to the former, discrimination and pressure to conform or pass for normal, he says. The intersection between being queer and being autistic is that we don't want to be altered, says Justin. We don't want to be cured of who we are. Our worth doesn't derive from seeming normal. And there ends the quote and the article. Now, like I said earlier, I was mentally bullied. It was more mental torture than it was getting beat up, you know, getting dragged out the playground after school and having my brains bashed in. It was more perceived mental torture than anything else. I knew I was different, yes, but I wasn't different as far as being homosexual, even though my friends, if you want to call them those, and you know who you are, I'm not going to call you out by name because mainly I've forgotten that part of my life, blotted that out, would play some tricks on you, play mental games and whatnot. And I'm going back to middle school and onwards. I mean, middle school kids, you get like 13, 14, you start becoming a real dick at that point. My nephew's headed in that direction, so it's going to be quite a ride if I'm ever brought back to their house here in the Rolling Hills. So there's that, and I found a second article here moving on from spectrumnews.org. That's not to be confused with the news channel on cable here in the Rolling Hills of Saratoga County and other parts of the country, if I had to imagine. And this was written a few months after the last article by Laura DeTaro at spectrumnews.org. And an explanation about gender and sexuality in autism. Now, Ms. or Mrs. DeTaro, if I may call her that, like I know her, describes gender identity thusly. Gender identity is a person's internal sense of their own gender. People who identify as the sex they were assigned at birth are called cisgender, or cis for short, whereas those who do not may use terms such as transgender, non-binary, or gender fluid. Researchers often use the phrase gender diverse as an umbrella term for different gender identities, similar to the way some people use neurodiverse to describe variations in cognitive style, including autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD for short. Now, I'm back to the being perceived as gay just so they could bust my balls and bust my chops and whatnot. My brother-in-law is pretty much the chief offender over the years. He's since stopped doing that, older and wiser and whatnot. But I can recall my younger days, he would do that just to, bust my chops and all that. I knew it wasn't mean-spirited. I didn't think of it at the time. But deep inside, looking back on it now, it kind of got me right here, As he said, beating the left part of his chest ever so gently, not that you can see it or anything. Now, Mrs. DeTaro, well, Laura we'll just call her, because I don't know if she's married or anything. I don't know her that well. Says, how common is gender diversity among autistic people? And she quotes some studies here. There was a 2018 study here in the States wherein 6.5% of those who responded were autistic adolescents, and almost 11.5% of autistic adults said they wished to be the gender opposite of what they had been assigned at birth. That means if they were male, they wished they had been born female, and vice versa. And that's in comparison with just 3-5% of the general population. And moreover, this study also found that on two measures of autism traits, higher scores were associated with a higher likelihood of gender diversity. A study the following year, 2019, found a similar association in children who are not diagnosed with autism, aka neurotypical. But there's one study that has been cited most frequently. It took place in the Netherlands, and they said about 15% of autistic adults in that country identify as either trans or non-binary. Among people assigned female at birth and among people assigned male at birth, the percentage is higher, and other studies have reflected that trend as well. In contrast with the study that I had just mentioned just moments ago, but by contrast, less than 5% of adults in the Netherlands general population have an identity other than cisgender. Well, we get to the real question here. It says, why is the prevalence of gender diversity higher in those on the autism spectrum than in the general populace? Well, quoting the article, experts say social experiences are likely a main component. Compared with neurotypicals, autistic people may be less influenced by social norms and so may present their internal selves more authentically. John Strang, director of the Gender and Autism Program at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., goes on to say, and I quote, you could then understand the co-occurrence as perhaps a more honest expression of underlying experiences, end quote. Back to the Netherlands here, Jeroen de Winter, hope I didn't butcher that name, who is a senior researcher at Tilburg University over there, said that it's possible that autistic people may come to conclusions about their sexual identity differently than neurotypicals. And Mr. DeWinter also goes on to say that some people on the spectrum have told them they would be likely to identify as bisexual after one same-sex sexual experience, but neurotypicals may be less likely to adopt that terminology based on that same type of encounter. Well, social experiences are one thing, biological factors are something else entirely, but they play no less a role, or may also play a role too. Exposure levels to hormones such as testosterone in the womb may be linked to autism, according to some research. While others say increased prenatal testosterone may also lead to more typically male behaviors and to less common sexualities and gender identities, though there's some evidence against that link. But no matter how you slice it, dice it, naughty, nice it, Prenatal testosterone does not explain why people on the spectrum assigned male at birth might identify as more feminine. But the biology of sexuality and gender in the general populace, there is some muddiness to that too. So let's not paint this with a broad stroke if we don't really understand that, and probably stuff we're never going to understand. Be we on the spectrum or neurotypical or heterosexual or LGBTQ, etc. There's still some stuff to work out, and I'm no expert on this. I'm just a straight heterosexual male in upstate New York. But to sum everything out, experts say it's likely that a combination of these and other factors contribute to the increased variety of gender identities and sexualities among autistic people. Okay, so how do autistic people best learn about gender and sexuality? Well, Laura says, and I quote, "For years, many parents and caregivers believe that autistic people on the spectrum, sorry, there I go violating my rule about first-person language, particularly those with intellectual disabilities, shouldn't be given information about sexuality, and compared to neurotypical people, they're less interested in relationships." And he also quoted the aforementioned Mr. DeVinter. However, as researchers recognize that providing relationship support is important to ensure the overall well-being of neurodiverse people, just as it is for neurotypicals, that belief is changing among researchers. Belonging to any kind of minority group, be it sexual or neurological, or even though it doesn't stay, I'd say ethnic minority, hate to drag geopolitics into this, are going to make people more susceptible to mental health problems. And that's because of a phenomenon known as minority stress. For somebody who is both gender and neurodiverse, belonging to several minority groups can really jack those problems up as far as intensity goes. Eileen Crehan, who was mentioned in the last article I wrote, but I didn't mention her until now, says that more comprehensive and inclusive sex education can help. Mrs. Crehan is an assistant professor of child study and human development at Tufts University in Massachusetts, or outside Boston. And she found that autistic people, or people on the spectrum, that's two now, people on the autism spectrum want information about sexual orientation and gender identity more than neurotypicals. And the research has borne that out, and it's shown that LGBTQ plus adolescents who have more inclusive sex ed in school have better mental health. So this goes hand in glove. And glove, too. And in clove. Okay, but anyway, only 19% of U.S. sex ed materials, however, are inclusive to the LGBTQ community, according to the advocacy group GLSEN, formerly the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, which created an unnecessary extra barrier for people who are both on the two spectrums. That would be autism and LGBTQ. Crehan says you have two hoops to jump through to get the information that you need. And I guess by what I just said, pretty unnecessary. You want to get that information, now it just leads to all sorts of confusion. So there you have it. Now, I'm going to try and sum this up as best I can. Sex education, the big takeaway is it should be accessible to all kinds of youth in school, especially those who are gay and on the autism spectrum, gay, lesbian, it's all that stuff. And it's rather confusing to navigate those waters, especially if you're in both camps or in at least one. Life is hard enough as it is on the autism spectrum, or even if you're neurotypical, but you put yourself in both those worlds, it can be a bit of a nightmare, or it can be an even bigger nightmare than what you're accustomed to. So there's that. I try to sum up as best I can. I hope you found this segment informative and like that. All right, folks, we're about to end this episode, but before I do, I just want to say, born down in a dead man's town, the first kick I took was when I hit the ground. You end up like a dog that's been beat too much till you spend half your life just covering up. That's Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. Bruce Springsteen, one of my favorite artists of all time, musical that is. All right, let's get to the pod shoutouts, and kind of light here, to be honest with you. First up, GFA Live, Peter Winston and Keith Langston. So far, this is part one of the 1989 Royal Rumble, of which they did a live watch. Part two is sure to be out by the time this episode drops. I didn't even write part one on my notes here. But just the same, you can follow Pete and his podcast at GF Allentown Pod on Twitter. And check out his YouTube channel. Speaking of which, we had the Break It Down show with Pete A. Turner. I watched a little bit of this woman whose name escapes me at the moment. She was a page at NBC way back when. And she got some great stories to tell. Can't wait for that to show up on the pod feed. You can follow Pete at Pete A. Turner and the Break It Down show at Break It Down show across all your social media. Back to the Jingle Fest thing for just a minute. The Loyal Lowe's podcast, Chuck and Roxy, had Alex Budin and no less a figure in the Tony Kornheiser show lore than Pablo Torre of ESPN. How about that, folks? Anderson Center 1 in 36 podcast, Timothy Gifford from Movia Robotics was on the show. But I forgot to give the social media for Chuck and Roxy. You can follow them on Twitter at Loyal Littles Pod and on Instagram at Loyal Littles Podcast. The Anderson Center, you can follow them at Anderson Autism on Twitter and on Instagram at Anderson Center for Autism. And finally, the Lawrence Ross show that came out just recently. No guests, it was just a bunch of discussion. Lawrence talked about the possibility of a UPS driver strike. We got the Writers Guild of America on the picket lines already. There might be an actors one at the end of the month. And also talk of Jim Rome. I know this is like the dark side of the moon in Utica, New York comparison here, but he was also talking about Jim Rome running people with lame emails about football. That means they probably heard of. Or that was not very good emails in this instance. You can follow Lawrence Ross and his show across all your social media at Blind Lawrence. As for this show, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, name podcatcher here. If you have a podcatcher that doesn't have my podcast available, here's a little trick for you. Grab the RSS feed address from the show notes, copy it, paste it onto your podcatcher, and you're good to go as far as that. If said podcatcher has rating and review capabilities, give yourself some good karma and give yours truly a 5-star review and a good write-up that certainly helps me out. Thanks in advance for all of that. And so ends the 187th episode of the Keep It To Yourself podcast. I certainly thank you for listening. I'll talk to you on the next one, whenever that may be. And as always, and above all else, well, first up, have yourself a great 4th of July weekend. And as always, wait for it. Wait for it. Keep smiling. Otis lives. Ditto Castleton. The Keep It To Yourself podcast has been a Beware of Foul Balls production.
Now the 3-2 swung on a pop foul back here.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
It really hit me. I didn't know it was coming back that far.
Oh my goodness gracious!